chapter 49, verses 1 through 28, you see that Judah and Joseph are receive the most attention, and it is Jacob, a.k.a. Israel, giving his blessing and proclamations to the children of Israel. And this is what is going to happen. It is the blaze, what I call the blessings of Israel. Okay, it is a portrait of the future. It will be the history of each son, and it is even being fulfilled to this very day. You can look at the tribes of Israel and the maps in the back of your Bible, and you can go through it. If you spend any time in Israel, you'll understand where they lie out, and even to the point that you see that Issachar was going to be very profitable, and that is where Haifa is, and that is where one of the most prolific areas of computer technology is coming out of right now. It's kind of amazing. You can just go right down the line and say, well, here's how it all lays out. And it is true, even to the point where Judah would be the strongest, and that is the line of the tribe of Judah. We see that fulfilled today. That's the southern tribe. And you see that the southern part would be Benjamin, and Benjamin would be a warrior. And if you go through that today, you will see that that is absolutely true. That is where the wars take place. That is where they're on guard. It just goes on and on and on and on. But then in 49, verses 28 through 32, you will see Jacob's dying, and then his command to his children is fulfilled in Genesis chapter 50, verses 12 through 14. Here's what he says. All of the 12 sons, in verse 28, all of these, the 12 tribes of Israel, Jacob, and this is what their father said to them as he blessed them. He blessed them, everyone, with the blessings appropriate to him. He gave to each of them just as he promised, but he does go back through it, and it's very fascinating to go back through that and see how Jacob says, this is what's going to happen to you. And then he charged them. This is a fascinating phrase because he's saying, this is a commandment to you. Don't make me come back. I mean, that's basically what it's saying. I have a charge to you. And he said to them, I am about to be gathered to my people. Now, that's a phrase that you really have to pay attention to, because I listen today to a lot of the stuff, and we always talk about life after death, and it's a new mentality. I actually hear people trying to tell me that this life after death thing didn't even just show up until the Christians started doing it. Really? But I will be gathered to my people. What does that mean? He believed that there was life after death. I'm going to be gathered to who? Those who have gone before me. Those who have gone who were promised covenant of God. He goes down the line. And I listen to people today, and they say, well, it's just a new phenomenon. You know, because the Buddhists have always believed in reincarnation. You just keep coming back and just keep coming back. And they're older religion than us. Well, they may be older. But the truth of the matter is, Judaism and Christianity have always believed in life after death, not as a goat, not as a dog or a cow or your Aunt Ethel. The Jews and Christians have always believed that you are gathered to your people. You are gathered to your people. And that is what he states there. I charge them that I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers. Okay, you know what he's saying here. Bury me with Isaac and Abraham. And we already seen that laid out. All right. In the fields of Ephron, the Hittite. In the cave, in verse 30, he explains, here's where I want it to be, which Abraham bought, along with the field of Ephron, the Hittite, and the burial site. Verse 31, and they were buried Abraham his... Now watch what he says in verse 31. This one here kind of hit me kind of quick, because who was it that Jacob loved? Who? Rachel, wasn't it? He loved Rachel. Remember? He got... did the 7 years and got stuck with Leah. And then, well, all right, I'll go with the number two. And did another 7 years, right? Look what it says here. There they buried Abraham and his wife, Sarah. There they buried Isaac with his wife, Rebekah. And there I buried who? Leah. Who? His first wife. The honor is finally given to Leah. Lay my body down with who? My first wife. But I thought he did. You see it through all through Scripture. Who did he love? Rachel. But who did he give honor to at his death? Leah. Isn't that fascinating? That's fascinating to me. It's fascinating. It's like, at my death, I am doing what? Bringing the honor and glory that is due this woman. I like that. I really, really do like that. Okay, look what he says here. The field and the cave is in it, purchased from the sons of Heth. And Jacob finished charging his sons. He drew his feet unto the bed, breathed his last, 1858 BC. And he was gathered to his people. The last thing he did was show, remember what he did. Manasseh and Ephraim, he says, I'll adopt his sons. They are my children. They will be treated as my children. Why? They are from my first son of who? Rachel. I will gather them, those two boys, as my sons. And you're going to see how it plays out. But he gathered them in. So now we got the 12 tribes of Israel are 14. It's okay. God doesn't panic. All right? But he gathers them up. Right? And he gives Rachel. Do you see what he just did? He gave Rachel a two spot in the inheritance, right? The children of Rachel get two. Or three. Sorry. Benjamin, Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim. Okay, they get three spots. All right? But then at his death, what does he do? Gives Leah the place of honor. Where I buried my wife, who? Leah. It's kind of cool when you look at Jacob and you think what a knucklehead he was playing favoritism. And it did cause him a whole lot of problems, didn't it? And yet in that favoritism, he learned. All right. But where did he learn the favoritism from? His father, Isaac. Okay. Where did Isaac learn it from? His father, Abraham. All right, but it goes down the line, and yet even in that, God is still faithful. He still brings it to the bow. All right, so look what happens then. Then Joseph fell on his father's face, wept over him, and kissed him. Okay, now remember, Israel has gone through this 7 years of famine. They've been living in Goshen. They've prospered. Everything is going great for them, and now they're there, and Jacob has died. He falls on his father's face and he kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants. And then look what he says here. He says he commanded his servants the what? The physicians to do what? To embalm him. Okay, here's what's amazing about this text. He did not gather the priest of Egypt to do the embalming. Who did he gather? The physicians. Why? You don't get the magic. You don't get the mysticism with the physicians. You're going to get, HMOs, PPOs, right? The deductible is cheaper without the priest. All right? Do you see what I'm trying to get at? Why? He didn't bring it in. Who is it they serve? Single God. All right. So he gathers these doctors to bring him in. And they're going to do what? Mummify him. You've seen it, Tutankhamun. You've seen it with a lot of the television shows. That one series that came out, The Mummy, redone the fourth and fifth time or whatever with the old Tarzan dude who plays. Anyway. If you haven't seen those, don't worry about it. But anyway, all right, but they did mummify. Now, here's some fascinating stuff because remember who wrote this book? Who wrote this book? A Hebrew did. Okay, and you know what's amazing about this book? It falls along with Egyptian archaeology. Okay? There are people today that tell you that the Jews were never in Egypt. All right? And yet, how do the Jews know the Egyptian archaeology? And, okay, well, but what are you talking about? All right, look what he says here. Now 40 days, look at verse 3. Now 40 days were required for, such is the period required for embalming. Did you know that? Did you know that it took 40 days to embalm under the Egyptian method? What? Hey, do I need to get into this?
Maybe not.
Basically what you have to do is, how do I say it? You got to gut the body, then you have to dry the body, and then you wrap the body and hold the internal organs in jars. And then they get wrapped on the outside wrappings. Okay? And Egyptologists will tell you that that is exactly how you embalm. You know what's really bizarre about that? Hebrews don't embalm. They don't embalm. That's why you always laid the down of a feather on their lip, made sure they were dead, and then wrapped them and buried them quickly. Why? Because it wouldn't take long for them to start stinking. Okay? Smelling. Sorry, I probably shouldn't say stinking. All right? But what the Egyptians did was that they would take all the internal organs out, all right, and then they would lay the body and the organs, and they would allow them to dry, okay, because Egypt is a arid place, very arid place. And then they would wrap it, and that's how they would embalm and mummify the bodies, okay? That's fascinating to me because who's writing this book? A Hebrew, okay? And Hebrews don't like embalming. Okay, I'll look at show you at the end of the book. They take Joseph's what? They don't take his mummy back to the lands of Canaan. What do they take? His bones back to the land of Canaan. All right, now watch what he says here. When the days of mourning for him, all right, and the Egyptians wept for him for 70 days. Okay, so instead of the normal 40 days of grieving, the Egyptian gave him an extra 30 days. Who? Jacob. Remember? And they didn't like these Hebrew people. But Pharaoh called it and said, listen, this is the father of Joseph who basically saved our rear ends in 7 years of famine. We will give this man honor. And then what he says here. When the days of mourning for him were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found favor in your sight, please speak to Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, behold, I am about to die in my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan. There you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please let me go up and bury with my fathers, and then I will return. All right? He wants to go back to where he started from. Why? There was a promise of what? Three patriarchs buried in the land of Canaan. Okay? Who was the promise made to? Abraham. All right? This would be number two. Okay? Isaac is buried there, and you take Joseph, that would be, or Jacob, and that would be number two. All right? And I'll show you that, guess who goes the third? Joseph. All right? Look what he says here. Pharaoh said, go up, bury your father as he has made you swear. So Joseph went to bury his father, and with him he went up with the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his household, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, and all the household of Joseph and his brothers and his father's household, and they left only the little ones and their flocks and the herds of the lands of Goshen. They went up both with chariots and horsemen, and there was a very great company. Now listen, that is what you call a funeral procession. Okay, you got 12 tribes, the elders of the tribes, okay, and the senior father heads of the tribes, and chariots and horsemen of Egypt, and the elders of Egypt. Okay, that is the respect that has been placed before the Jews. All right, now listen, they did not like the Hebrews. They did not like the Hebrews. All right, they were loathsome, is the translation that you get in the New American Standard. Why? They weren't of their custom. The Jews believed in a God. The Egyptians believed in multiple gods. And yet, even these Egyptians with their multiple gods could look at these Hebrews and say, you know what? Their God is pretty powerful, even if he is just one. Okay, this respect, this escort that you see is going to set the stage for Joseph's burial and God's promise. It lays the foundation. That's one of the things that you'll find in the book of Genesis, is that it's foundation upon foundation upon foundation upon foundation. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. That's one of the things that I start hearing people try to say that the church is the new Israel. Man, it's hard to fit into the book of Genesis. God's sovereignty is always there. God says, I will take care of this people, and my promises will be to this people. And he takes care of them in detail. Here's what he says. When they came up to the threshing floor of Adat, which is beyond the Jordan, they lamented there with a very great and sorrowful lamentations, and he observed 7 days of mourning for his father. Now remember, they've already had 70 days, but that was the Egyptian custom. Now they're dealing with the Hebrew custom. This is how we're supposed to do it. Now the inhabitants of the land of the Canaanites saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Adat, and they said, this is a grievous mourning for the Egyptians. Now listen, this is how big that I want you to pay attention. Remember this this great famine? And the only reason these outlying countries survived was what? Because of the Egyptians. The Egyptians, under the guidance of Joseph, literally had led and saved the universe. I hate to say it that way, but that's the way it was. Joseph said, 7 years of blessing, we're all going to put it in the storage shelter, and then we're going to have 7 years, and it's just going to be Katie bar the door. And I mean, even the Egyptians, you see it in this country. How many people in this country take the years of blessing and storehouse it for the years of famine? For the years of famine. You know, when I grew up, my grandparents kind of raised me. I grew up, you know what they told me? It was key. Number one key that you had to deal with. Whatever house you buy should not be more than 1 year's income. Okay? And then they said, make sure that you've got enough to make a house payment for 1 year with no income. Why? They'd come out of what? The Great Depression. They'd gone through an awful war. And they said, you know what? When you have a blessing, you need to stockpile it for the bad times. How many of us do that? You know, my stepdad never financed a car. My stepdad only financed one thing in his entire life. That was his house. He bought it for a 30-year loan, paid it off in 7. How did he do that? Because he didn't buy a house that was more than 1 year's income. Okay, what do we do in America today? We live like the Egyptians. I got 7 years of feast. I'm just going to spend like a drunken sailor. And that's what we do. Why? And you know what's amazing about it? In Corinthians 10, Paul says, don't follow the picture of the nation of Israel. They were given to you as an example of what not to do. Now, that's not a spiritual ramification. Truth of the matter is, did the Jews learn from what they did in the land of Goshen? No. No. Nor did the Egyptians, because after Joseph's death, what happened? They turn on the Jews. You see that? I really wish that we could grasp this, because things in our society and our worlds today have not changed. It all looks the same. It all looks the same. I was in the grocery store, was it yesterday, the other day, and I started watching these people, and I didn't know you could do this, but you can. Do you know you can buy your groceries on credit card? You know, that just happened. That hasn't been an ongoing thing. You know, the last time that it happened? 1929. In 1929, they said, you know what? You heard the statement, the Roaring Twenties? Why, that was the land of, that was the time of plenty. What happened in 32? Okay, what's the stock market? I don't know. It's like 14,000. I think it dropped a little bit and all the rest of it. And we all say, well, it's world economy. It's this, that, and the other. You know what's amazing? Go back and read in the 20s and see what they're saying. You're going to hear the same verbiage that is used. Why? Is it going to collapse? It has to. It has to. Why? I've read the end of this book. The end of this book says, is America in there? Something's going to have to happen. I mean, I hate to be a pessimist, but, you know, perhaps I'm a pessimist. Why? Because I watched the saints of God do the same thing as the Egyptians, the same thing as the Corinthians, the same thing as any given lost person. Why? We live for the moment. Well, I can finance that for 2 years and I don't have zero interest rates on it, and I can just make payments on it. Have you ever noticed that? When people go buy cars, what are the monthly payments? No, how much does it cost? You know, I got burned on that one time. I leased a car one time and it only took me 29 years to pay it off. Okay, I could have bought a city block for what I ended up on that lease. All right, I mean a nice city block, or at least a Hummer. I mean, I'm talking the big Hummer, not the little Hummers. Okay, why? This is the way to go. I mean, can you really drive 12,000 miles in a year? I drive 12,000 miles getting out of my driveway a year. But you see what I'm trying to get at? Why? Do you realize how old this is? This is 1800 BC. And nothing has changed. Here's what he says. They have lamentation. The people of Canaanites say, whoa, man, this is seriously tough. This is seriously tough. Verse 12 says, thus his sons did for him as he had charged. They were committed to it. They did exactly what he was asked. His sons carried him to the land of Canaan, and they buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, buried site. And he buried him right where he wanted to be buried. He took him back where he said, where he promised Abraham that his what? Now you got to remember something here. I want you to think about this. Okay? God says, I will give the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 heirs of Israel, land. Where? In Goshen? No. It will be in where? Canaan. You got to understand something. That's the only people on the whole planet Earth that's ever been promised property. Okay? You know what's amazing? The 12 original heirs never taste it. They never taste it. They never get a part of it. None of them. Reuben doesn't get any of it. Judah doesn't get any of it. I mean, their heirs will, but they don't get it. And yet, here he's even setting the stage for Joseph's burial. Okay, now, this is funny because they buried him, the father Joseph, buried his father, verse 14, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who had gone up with him, and they buried his father. All right, so now they're going back to Egypt. Had this great time of memorial. They did exactly as the father had asked. And then when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, here comes the conscience problem. All right? And listen, if I was one of these guys, I would be having a conscience problem. Dad's dead. Uh-oh. What if he said he really forgived us and everything, but Did he? Have you ever forgiven somebody, but you hold it over them? Nobody's ever done it, right? We don't do that. But we hold it over them. I'll always leave it back here. What's that for? Just in case. Why? Because if you repeat the same mistake, then I can bring it up and say, Pete and Repeat were sitting on the fence. Pete fell off and what was left? Repeat. Pete and Repeat were sitting on the fence. Pete fell off. What was left? Repeat. Pete. Okay, see what I mean? We do that, don't we? What was going on with Joseph's brothers? Uh-oh. I like that text. And here's the reason that I do. They're no different than you and me. They're absolutely no different than you and me. There's nothing here that separates them, that makes them these great, or these. I mean, these guys are knuckleheads. Let's be realistic. Even Joseph. I mean, I don't want to play it wrong, okay? But they all are doing, I mean, Joseph's little interlude, remember what he had when his brothers showed up and they wanted grain and all the rest of it and he didn't reveal who he was and all the rest of it? Who wouldn't do that? Who wouldn't do that? Go get your little brother. I'm going to fix this. All right, why? I'm testing you. Okay. Look what he says. What if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full all the wrong which we did to him? Now, let's be realistic here. They did some serious wrong to Joseph, however you cut it. Okay? When I hear they say, you know, blood is thicker than water. Really? Not if you're Joseph and you've got 11 brothers. Okay? They sent a message to Joseph saying, your father charged before he died saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you. Now see how what they're doing here? Really? It says that Joseph wept on him when he died. Who was there? Joseph was there at Jacob's death. And now all of a sudden they come up, you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgressions of your brothers and their sin, and they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgressions of the servants of God and your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Why? Because when Joseph stood before them and said, what you planned for evil, God meant for good, I meant it. Now listen, let me ask you a question. What God plans for good in your life and men do evil in your life to get it accomplished, do you hold a grudge? Or do you see the providence of God? That's the text. See, Joseph dies exactly as he lived. What? God's sovereign. This don't make sense to me, but God's sovereign. And God is involved in the affairs of men. Period. Whether you like it or not. There's no accidents tooling along and all of a sudden, uh-oh. God has every step, every waking hour. He knows your thoughts before you think them. He knows your words before you say them. Why? He's sovereign. And Joseph lived that way. And you know what? There's no doubt in my mind that Joseph at times had to look at it and go, this just don't seem to fit. And yet God was still always, 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 always faithful to his promise, correct? And it says, Joseph wept when they spoke to him this way. You know what? That makes sense. What'd you think? I was kidding you? What'd you think? That I was blowing you theology until dad died? And then I'm going to whip the fire out of all of you? How many people do that? How many people do that today? I got to be good while dad's here. Dad's here. Then his brothers also came to him, fell down before him. Behold, we're your servants. Okay. Now remember what got this all started? I had a dream. Right? And that you guys would all bow before me. Now, Joseph probably wasn't the smartest cube to go out and say, oh, by the way, I had a dream, you guys are all going to serve me, even though I am next to the youngest. Probably was not the most brilliant thing. And probably wasn't really brilliant for Jacob to say, yep, that's right. And I'll give you the code of honor. And, you know, absolutely, nope, this right there didn't fit. But the truth of the matter is what? It's exactly what God did. It's exactly what God did. They came, they fell down before him, said, behold, we are your servants. And Joseph should have looked at him and said, na-na-na-na-na, my dream was true. That's what I'd have done. I didn't. That's not me. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Look what he says next. This is an amazing phrase. Am I in God's place? Think about that phrase. It's an amazing phrase. Anybody here ever struggled with, wonder what the will of God is for me? Okay? How about try it this way? Am I in God's place? It's got a different twist to it, doesn't it? See, I'm wanting the will of God. You know what that means? I would like to be the next pastor to the presidents, take Billy Graham's place, and, you know, help reconcile infidelity, you know, give counsel on how to deal with the Arabs and the Israelis, and a few other odds and ends, and be really great, and, you know, tell them God bless you and all the rest of it. Really? Or would you prefer to be in God's place? I would prefer to be in God's place than wandering around in the wilderness trying to figure out what is the will of God. Right? How many times do we say, but I want the will of God? And my response, and I've done this in what some people would call counseling. Are you willing to be in God's place? Because if you're not willing to be in God's place, you're never going to find the will of God. And I got to be honest with you, there's times I don't know the will of God until after I've passed through it. And then I realized I was in God's place, and I can look in my rearview mirror and say, oh, cool. And you know what? Tell me that ain't what Joseph does. I mean, if you look at it, I get sold to slave traders, and yet I prosper as a slave. Everything listen, you need to understand, he prospers as a slave. It isn't that he is successful, he prospers. It's that the Midas touch. Everything he touches is exceedingly beyond what you could ever think of. Okay, then that kind of blows up, and he ends up in jail. Okay, the thing is, he could have ended up dead, but Potiphar says, no, put him in jail. And in jail, he does what? I still don't know how you prosper in jail, but he prospered in jail to the point the jailer said, hey, Joseph, run the jail. Okay, that's the proverbial prisoners running the jail. Anyway, he moves from there to where? Palace of Pharaoh. And what does he end up doing? Running Egypt. And how did it start? They threw him in a pit, beaten. And they got conscience, got the best of them because they didn't want to have his blood on their hands. They sold him to slave traders. And the whole time he can look at it and he says, but I'm in the place where God wants me. How many of you do that? How many of us run around saying, I want the will of God? Or how many of us say, I'm in the place of God? That's what he says. For am I in God's place? Okay. And I like that because he gives them a very pointed question and he tweaks their memory from chapter 45. What you intended for evil, God intended for good. See, the question is right in their face. Why? That hurt him. Well, you think that I've been kidding? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. Now, you and I would look at it and say, well, God, ain't there a better way? Yeah, probably. You and I could have thought of a better way to get many people saved. But this way, who gets credit for it? God does. On which plane? Every plane. You can't change it. Why? Because that is not exactly the way we would do it. I'm going to be a prisoner. I'm going to be a slave. I'm going to be a prisoner. And then I'm going to have these little dream things. And life is good. And now here we go. Okay, why? Because God does what God does when He gets the glory. Listen, you can be an excellent speaker and say, look, I'm a preacher. You can be a servant of God and say, here I am, send me. You can be a servant of God and say, oh, wretched man that I am. Okay? But I want to be in God's place. God, where do you want me? What do you want me to do? Well, what if He sends you to... What if He does? If you're in God's place, what happens? You know what's amazing about being in God's place? You're only immortal. That's all. Nothing can happen to you that isn't exactly as God would deem it necessary. I like that idea. I'm in God's place. Look what he says there in 21. So therefore, he said, you know what he says there? And you know what? How much is the overwhelming presence of God in this scenario? You look at it, he wept. You're accusing me of what? Why didn't I kill you on the way to bury Dad? Why didn't I kill you on the way back from burying Dad? Why didn't I kill you mysteriously like you claimed that happened to me, to Dad? I mean, I'm only running the Egyptian government. That's all. Why didn't I do that? And when they made this accusation to him, you know what his response was? He cried. I am your brother. I am your brother. And then he says this, therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you, your little ones. So he comforted them and he spoke kindly to them. That's amazing. That is a person who says, you know what? I am in God's place. There's not a nanosecond of my existence that is not in God's place. It hasn't been easy. But when you're in God's place, it never is going to be easy. Now Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. 110 years. And Joseph saw the third generation of Ephraim's sons. Also the sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knees. Why? Because I am in God's place. Joseph said to his brothers, I'm about to die, but God will surely take care of you, bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on an oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Now that's an amazing phrase right there, because Joseph died just as he lived. He was dependent on God. He trusted God and His promises. He finished. You know, it's he finished strong. Do you see that? How many Christians that I have seen who start off strong, do amazing stuff, and then just die? Fall away. Absolutely fall away. Jack MacArthur, John MacArthur's father, and two other men were noted for the Welsh revival in the early 50s. Okay? They went down and preached. Okay? And God blessed their ministries, and they saw people turn, they saw faith grow, they saw the Keswicks come out, and they saw all of this stuff happening, and all of this repentance and holiness and all the rest of it. And out of the three men who God used to literally pry wickedness out of that area, one stayed the course. The other two fell away. The other two fell away. I was speaking with Dr. Olford, Dr. Stephen Olford, he's in glory now, and he said he was the biggest heartache that he ever had was all the men who went through seminary with him have all fallen away but him. I seen it with John MacArthur, all the men that he had studied with and all the rest, and how many of them had fallen away. I look at my own life and see men of God who stepped up to the plate, swung the bat, and actually at times hit things. and then watch him walk away. The pastor who did my wedding ended up divorcing his wife and selling a burglar alarm stuff down in Florida right now. Walked away. But you know what? Joseph set a pattern for you and I. He says, I started out. Now let me tell you something. That you guys can have a bad life in this, but yours won't match Joseph's. It won't even get close. And when he finished, you know what? He finished just as he started. He says, you know what? I understand this thing. I trust God. You see, Joseph mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22, of the great faith hall of fame. And here's what's amazing about this. What he says here. Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here. Joseph died at the age of 110 years old and was embalmed and placed in a coffin in where? In Egypt. You know what happens about that? He left with trusting God to do what? Take him to the promised land. And you know what's amazing about taking Joseph to the promised land? Joseph was going to the land that God had promised his fathers. Okay? 400 years later, Moses takes his bones out of Egypt. But you know what? Moses can't get his bones into the promised land. It ain't until Joshua chapter 24 do you see Joseph's bones. That's 40 years of wandering in the desert. And the three patriarchs are together just as God promised. But it takes 440 plus years to get him there. And yet Joseph's testimony is this simple thing. Am I not in God's place? You ever thought about that? I will build my nation of Israel. In 70 AD, it was completely obliterated. It is the only time in known human's understanding that a nation was obliterated. Gone. History. No, not. That's not what I mean. A lot of civilizations have been destroyed, obliterated. But Israel in 1948 all of a sudden showed up again. No other civilization has ever done that. Never done it. Why? God said, I'm going to do it. Who gets credit for it? God does. He dies in 1804 BC. 110 years to Egyptologists is the perfect lifespan. And then you have 280 years of silence. Nothing happens. You don't hear anything. And then in 1525 BC, you have the birth of Moses. And God continues on with his faithfulness. Let me ask you a question. Are you in God's place? Because if you're in God's place, then all you're doing is standing in God's faithfulness. It's that simple. Let's pray. Father, I just praise you for your word. I thank you for Joseph. Father, I thank you that as I have looked at this and I've done such a terrible job of articulating it, but I pray that you have taught that the people understand Joseph is no different than the rest of us. Nor was his brothers, nor was his father, nor was his father's father. And yet, Father, the simplicity of it is that to know that you are with us. Father, the simplicity of it is to know that you are faithful. Father, the simplicity is to know we need to be where you are, in your place. Father, thank you for this evening. Thank you for the amazing things you're doing. And Father, I trust you. And Father, I trust that you will grow all of our faith, and we will lean more and more upon you and be in your place to your glory. Amen.